Okay, we're now recording, and Janet and I were talking about the View Cart button and its choice of whether you can have it on your website or not. She sent me a frantic email last week, like, oh, my God, it's not there, it's not there. But I was a little bit too busy to respond to her because I don't use a View Cart button for a specific reason. Not that I wouldn't use it or have anything against it. It's just that View Cart lets you go back to the shopping cart easily from wherever you are. And the reason I don't use it is because I try to force people into specific bundles of products and not give them too many choices. I really don't want them going to my catalog too often because, in many cases, because it gives them too many choices. And people that have too many choices vote no and disappear on you. So that's why I don't use it. But it's certainly available to you if you go into the view codes part of your cart for each one of you that have the Kickstart cart. You can just put a code on underneath like a view cart graphic button or a text link, and it'll take people right back to your cart from wherever they were. And the reason Janet noticed this specifically was because I did a session last time about usability, website usability, and that certainly does play into it. So it boils down to the fact that you don't break the rules until you understand them. And so I'm breaking the rule by making it a little more difficult for them to shop on one hand, but forcing them into bigger products and my own bundles on the other hand. So that's my
story. It's drastically increased my sales.
Yeah, now the only thing that worries me about that is what were you doing wrong on the other end? That why you weren't forcing them into bundles and things on the first place. So that worries me a little bit that it drastically increased your sales, but we'll take good sales no matter how we get them. So I'd like to review more of the way you were doing it before to see why the sales would jump so drastically with just that button. Okay, anybody else check in that I don't know about?
Marlena's here.
Hello, Marlena.
Yeah, hi.
Do we have this CD done yet?
I'm in the midst of doing it, and I took 2 days off. I'm doing nothing today and tomorrow. That's all I'm doing.
Okay, great.
So I've been working at it, so I've got to get the next step.
That's all I want to hear about is your CD being done.
Okay.
All right. Anybody else?
Hi, Tom. It's Roberta.
Hello, Roberta. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Anybody else? Okay, well, we're going to do, once in a while, I do a book review, usually something I've been reading, or I've actually read this one twice already. I'm on the third reading. I've been reading a little bit every morning on the treadmill. And, yes, Janet, I'm back on the treadmill, so everybody's saying, yeah, right, you're exercising. the name of the book is Triggers. By Joseph Sugarman, Joe Sugarman, he goes by, 30 sales tools you can use to control the mind of your prospect to motivate, influence, and persuade. And Joe is a great guy, very successful. I've spoken with him before. A nice guy. In fact, he had a retreat center for a while, I think, on copywriting or direct sales or something a long time ago. There's 30 of these things in this book, but I'm going to go, I think, over only about 20 of them, so some of them we've mentioned before. So we're going to start out with, these are the psychological triggers, and the first one I'm going to talk about is prospect nature. And these are the terms that he uses. Sometimes we call them something else, so I'll mention that whenever I run into one of those. But prospect nature is basically knowing who the heck you're selling to. And this works right into the niche marketing arena that I'm always harping on, and why people that do harp on niche marketing, why they do harp on it. Simply because it's the least risky way to sell things. And the reason is because you can, and later on we'll see one of the emotional triggers, but if you know more about your prospect, you can only say things in your sales letter that is going to relate to your prospect. The problem with general products and general audiences is that it's very difficult to write specific language that only pushes their buttons. Because the minute a person is reading your sales copy and sees something that doesn't apply to them, it's very likely that's the point they'll bag out and leave. So whenever you know the prospect, you can be absolutely sure that everything that you say in your sales letter applies to them, and you'll get much more sales much easier than trying to go general. All right, so knowing your prospect is one of the triggers. Now, here's another psychological trigger called objection raising. I have been very, very good at this, basically because I'm pretty much fearless when it comes to things. And a lot of people are afraid and want to hide some of the negatives of their product. Well, the people that sell the most bring up the objections or the problems with their product virtually immediately or very close to the front of their sales presentation or sales letter. And this plays into another one of the triggers of credibility. When you bring up the objection yourself, it all of a sudden becomes a non-objection. I mean, politicians would be a lot better to bring up some of the skeletons in their closet, but they're deathly afraid of doing so. But when you bring them up, all of a sudden they don't look like you've been trying to hide them, and it raises your credibility. So objection raising in the beginning is a great thing. For instance, some of the examples I'm going to use from his book and some of the examples I'll use from just selling my speaking system stuff. In my speaking system, and even almost everything I sell to you and everybody else, right in the beginning I say, hey, folks, this is going to take a lot of time. You got to work on this. This is not any kind of get-rich-quick scheme. Now, that's totally opposite of what people always try to make you feel like, oh, this is easy, autopilot, and those kinds of things. So I'm becoming more realistic and more believable to people because I'm raising the objection that they're going to say, well, I don't have enough time to do this. Well, I'm bringing it right up front that, hey, yes, it's going to take time to do this. Now, the next trigger that Joe mentions is called objection resolution. Because if you raise the objection and just leave it hanging out there, people will say, yeah, you know, he was right. It is too much work. I ain't going to buy this thing. So that's not the result that you want. So objection resolution is, for instance, in my sales letter, I have a thing that says, I'll show you a way to practice and be great speaking without taking any extra time out of your day. See, so I raised the objection that it's going to take time, and then I overcame it by saying, I'm going to show you a way to beat that problem. See? So that's just one example, but he gives more, of course, in the book. Now, the next one is a psychological trigger is involvement and ownership. Now, one of the hokiest ones you ever see is the when you get a direct sales package and they want you to take a sticker from one place of the mailing and put it somewhere else. All right, and it may be hokey, but it works like a charm. It still works to this day to get people more involved and to take an ownership in the fact that they're working, looking at this direct mail piece and interested in it. Now, ways you can do it in that are a little less hokey like that would be to have like a quiz. For instance, I could have a quiz in my sales letter that says, you know, can you answer these five questions about professional speaking? Now, they're reading it, and they're wanting to know the answers. It's just like when you put a puzzle or some kind of riddle, and then the answer is upside down somewhere in the magazine. Well, that's a very common technique to get you looking through the place to find the answer. So involvement and ownership are really important. Now, those are pretty obvious ways, but your words that you use can create a picture of ownership in people's minds. And he uses the example, and I used to have a Corvette when I was in college, and so I know how great it is to have a Corvette. But he paints the picture in your mind about, feel the breeze. He uses terms like, I think they call them kinesthetic terms. Feel the breeze blowing through your hair in your convertible Corvette. Watch the people staring at you as you go by, and things of that nature to get you involved and as if you've already taken ownership of the product. So that kind of language in your sales letter and on your website can get you a lot more sales. Okay, another one he uses is called storytelling. Part of my sales letter is I say, well, let me tell you how I started out. And so I tell them about how I used to do five jobs a night for $75 a piece just to get by, and I go on and tell them how I evolved into a professional speaker. So that's storytelling and can be very effective, especially if your product is involved in the story. Okay, another trigger called authority. People respond to authority, and there's some really sicko examples, very scientific experiments about authority. They had people giving electric shocks to other people. Whenever the other person would answer a question wrong, the person being evaluated would give them an electric shock. And a guy in a white lab coat was I got this example from the book Influence. It's not the Triggers book, but it's the same idea. The guy in a white lab coat said, yeah, keep shocking him. And the shocks were getting more and more intense. And the people that were getting the answers wrong were screaming and almost ready to die. And they were almost giving them lethal shocks. And the person in the white lab coat kept telling them, go ahead and shock them. And people were willing to go up to almost lethal level shocks. But the person getting the shock was actually an actor. So they weren't really giving them shocks, but they thought they were, and they kept shocking them to the point where they're almost killing somebody just because an authority figure was telling them to do it. So it was very, I don't want to use the pun, but it was very shocking how people would respond to the authority and keep doing something that they knew was hurting somebody else even. So people respond to authority. Now, how does that relate to your selling things? Well, your authority can be shown in several different ways. For instance, your age could be authority. It means you've lived through things long enough. Like a 60-year-old executive would have more authority than a 20-year-old executive or 25-year-old, just because they would seem like they were more of an authority and have seen more in their life. And also goes along with your experience level. So let's say your experience level, for instance, with me. Okay, I've trained thousands of professional speakers. I couldn't even put a number on it, in the 75 times I've trained at the Speakers Association and all the other ones that came off the website, so forth. So that gives me authority because I've been there, done that, and I was called to critique President Bush. So I'm pretty much considered an authority on this topic. So you have to convey those things in your sales letter so that people believe that you're the authority on this, so they should probably deal with you. Okay. Oh, another thing you can use for authority is regulation. And this is a kind of a crazy area here because, for instance, someone could put on their product packaging, like regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. Well, that is such a broad statement that it sounds authoritative. Now, somebody skeptical like me would know better, but most people would say, "Oh, well, if the FDA is covering this this herb or this treatment or whatever it is, it must be all right." Well, just because the FDA regulates their category doesn't mean they particularly scrutinized that specific herb and gave it the A-OK. It just means that that herb falls into that category that's scrutinized by the FDA. So you can use that to your advantage if you are selling something that has some type of regulatory body and that you've never been called to the carpet. So, yes, you are regulated by that. For instance, and I'll tell you one right now, is I might, on occasion, I've been known to say people ask me about one of my claims. And I'd say, well, look, I have to make my claims true because I'm regulated by the ethics committee of my professional association. Absolutely true. I'm a member of the National Speakers Association. We have an ethics committee. I've been called upon them one time and was cleared. Some bitchy customer didn't like something, and so it is true that I have to fall under their category, although It's not like they look at anything I do unless somebody complains. So it's a perfectly legitimate way to use regulation to establish your authority. But anyway, any way you can do to establish authority will help you. Okay, next trigger, proof of value. This would be something like comparing your product to the other products and showing how yours is better. A lot of times you see features charts a lot of times on software packages and things where it shows all the things that the product X will do that product Y and Z won't do. Well, that's proof of value. And if the price is the same or even cheaper and it'll do more or the same, then you're showing this is a good value. So anything you can do to prove value, and then adding bonuses would be adding value. And whenever you put after a bonus, you put like value of $1,695 or $1,500 value. You're showing that that would be the cost of that bonus if they had to pay for that by itself. So you're proving value. So that's another important trigger. Okay, the next one, emotion. People buy on emotion, and then they justify with logic. So this one and the next one are tied together, emotion and logic. So emotion is the first one. And in that case, this also ties into knowing your prospect, so that you write the words that evoke emotion in people. And the words that would evoke emotion in a plumber would be different than in a self-help seeker. So you have to know your prospect, and then you have to know what words would evoke emotion in that type of person. Now, that is a little bit of art to that, but it is a skill, too, because there's books on that, just like the Words That Sell books that I recommend. You know, you have a whole load of different words to try to explain the same concept, and you would pick the ones that would most likely be appropriate for your prospect because you know your prospect. But you want to push the emotions because that's clearly where the sales are made. Very seldom are sales made on straight emotions. I'm sorry, on straight logic. They're made on emotions. So let's go into the next trigger of logic. And logic is usually how people justify their emotional sale, or emotional purchase, excuse me. And let's tie these two together in with my car. All right, and then he used the same thing in the book. I drive a Mercedes. Now, it's clearly true. If you went feature for feature, you probably could get a much better value in one of the imports, maybe Lexus or I don't even know. I don't even pay attention to any of those. So when you look at the sales brochures for Mercedes, and they're all slanted towards pictures that make you emotional and want to make you believe you belong to this group of elite people that own Mercedes, all right? And then they justify with logic with, okay, yes, it has ABS brakes, and the new models will turn the headlights depending on which direction you're turning for safety, you know. But I guarantee you nobody is buying a Mercedes paying $60,000 because the headlights turn to the left if you're turning to the left. It's a great thing. I always wished I had such a thing, but trust me, I didn't buy a Mercedes for that reason. So the Mercedes was bought along with another one of his triggers is the desire to belong to a group. All right, so I probably have more logic than emotion than most, but I desire to belong to a group of people that could afford to drive a Mercedes. I paid cash for my last one. Although this one I leased because it's a better tax deal. I could have paid cash for it if I wanted, but it's a better tax deal not to. But I also wanted to show, hey, listen, I can afford a Mercedes. I don't have to drive an import. It is an import, but I don't have to drive one of the cheaper imports. And I wanted to belong to that group to show my success. And there's no question about that. That had something to do with my decision to buy a Mercedes when I could have spent half the money and bought a regular car. So your desire to belong to a group. Another car example here, and you want to think of these and turn these into whatever your product is, but Volvo did the same thing, except they found out that people that were educated to a higher level usually bought Volvos. So they made a big deal of that, and the next time they checked, they found a way higher percentage of those same kind of people were buying Volvos. So realizing what group you're really in with your product and expanding that can get way more people wanting to belong to that same group. It's working a little bit, and I haven't even thought about it much with my mentee program. That's a very exclusive group that you're in. So other people want to belong to such a group. So whatever you can do to get them to desire to belong, push their emotional buttons, and then give them a chance to justify it with logic. An example of justifying things with logic for one of my products is the speaking system. I might say, this is most likely tax deductible as educational materials for your business. So that's a logical thing. There's all kinds of ways that you can tell the logic of it. For the car, it's safer. It's got more airbags than I got IQ, or something like that. So anything you can do to push the emotional buttons, but then give them a chance to logically justify their purchase, that's what he's talking about in those three things: emotion, logic, and desire to belong. Okay, next one, greed. This is not one that's uncommon at all. Greed, everybody wants to know, and I'll read this from his book here. Let me turn to page 213. He says it very clearly. There we go, 213. Let's see. People like to get more than they think they deserve. That was one of the sentences from his section on greed. It's a basic human emotional. It's been one of the basic human emotional persuasive elements since the start of world commerce. People like to get more than they think they deserve. Now, that's where when you throw in bonuses. And also, my buddy told me about one where, I think I mentioned this on another call, where he had a $97 product, and he said, this is a half-price-only sale, $39.95 if you buy today. All right, well, not one person called him up to tell him he made a mistake except his other buddies. But he made the mistake on purpose. And people bought it like crazy because they thought, hey, we're going to take advantage of this mistake. They were greedy. And he did it on purpose. So the way to do this logistically is to make the price low compared to a very high perceived value. All right? Price low compared to a very high perceived value up to a point. The reason I say up to a point is because of his next trigger called credibility. And that means if it's too cheap, if it's just too cheap to be believable, then you just lost your credibility and you overcame the greed factor to the where they're not going to buy because it sounds too good to be true. Now, I use this in the reverse when I named one of my products, How I Made $18K on one telephone seminar. At the time, I had already determined that product was, or that seminar had created probably $180,000 in that 1 year. But I'm thinking, if I say that, people are no way they're going to believe that unless they hear me explain where that money came from. So I just threw out the real amount that product should have been named and put in $18,000, which is still pushing the realms of unbelievability for most people that never did any of this stuff. But that one got by. But $180,000 would have sounded too hokey to be believable. So you want to play on the greed factor, but you have to keep it believable to keep it credible. So those are two of his triggers, greed and credibility, many times tied together. Okay, now the next one I'm not so hot at, to tell you the truth. And it's a really powerful one and very important, and I think that you should do this, again, up to a point. And he calls it the satisfaction conviction. Satisfaction conviction. And I'll read from that on page 215 of the book. He says, the satisfaction conviction says, I am so sure you will be satisfied that I will put my money where my mouth is and do something that you would suspect many will use to take advantage of me. So his satisfaction conviction is telling the prospect, and he actually writes this stuff, you will be so satisfied with this that I will give your money back a year later if you're not happy. Something like that. So he's telling them they're going to be satisfied and saying, well, I'll back it up by saying you're going to get your money back if you're not. And so that is an extremely powerful thing for people to hear and read. Now, I went the opposite direction, and I'm quite well known for doing the opposite of what the norm is. But again, you don't break the rules until you understand them. Where I took total satisfaction guarantee off of most of my stuff. In other words, don't buy this if you're not serious. I tell people right up front, I got a massive reputation. My lifestyle is not going to change if you don't buy this. I will kill myself to help you if you're serious. But if you're just kicking tires, don't bother me. Okay? So I go complete opposite. Although my satisfaction conviction was implied a little bit where I'm saying I'm going to kill myself to help you if you're serious. The product's got every single, I swear, every single thing in this sales letter is in that product, and I'll show you where it's at. So I'm kind of implying that I'm really, really, really proud of my product, but I'm not going as far as giving their money back if they don't do their part. So,
Tom?
Yeah.
This is Joan.
Mm-hmm.
Have you pulled your satisfaction guarantees from every product?
No, not from every product. Mostly the big-ticket products that I have time involved in, for instance, with consulting, like the Wake 'Em Up speaking system includes three consulting things. So on the phone. So that's my personal time involved. So I pulled it from that for sure. And I've mentioned this several times, is that my sales stayed the same, and I got a better quality customer. So that worked perfectly.
So you keep the guarantees on the lower price point products?
Well, usually the mid-priced ones, for instance, the ClickBook, I think I left it on the ClickBook, but not one person I think one person in 3 years has tried to return the ClickBook, trying to tell me they knew everything in it, and I'm thinking, it's no fool of shit. Get out of here. Hey, take your money and just get away from me. And then the regular e-books, but the like all my other e-books, I don't, because the lower-priced ones, I don't know these people, have no relationship, have nothing else to sell them, so I just make them non-refundable. But most of the tapes and things have a guarantee on them, but nobody, if you put a high enough quality on them, nobody returns them anyway. So.
Okay.
But the most important one to me was the Wake 'Em Up speaking system, because I had to do consulting with them. Okay, let's see. So that's satisfaction conviction. Okay, linking. Linking is a trigger where you tie what you're doing into something that they already recognize. And one of the examples he gives is back in the 70s when they had the CB radio craze. Well, CB radios, and I was in that craze for a long time, you could have a two-piece CB that was like 4 feet long and sitting on your desk with a big microphone, really cool-looking thing. I had, I forget what the brand it was, but it was the gold model. It was a big gold piece of electronics sitting on my desk. Well, he came out with a walkie-talkie, but everybody has walkie-talkies. They know what walkie-talkies are, but that wasn't the craze at the time. So he called it a pocket CB because everybody was on the CB bandwagon and sold like crazy because it was a walkie-talkie on the Citizens Band. So instead of just calling it a walkie-talkie, he called it a pocket CB, and they related. They linked the two together. He also did one where he had this this pill or this thing that you dropped in your gas tank, supposed to increase your gas mileage. So he called it vitamins for your car. Sold a gazillion of them. See? So he linked different things together to make people, you know, make an emotional quick, oh, I know what that is. That sounds great. And jump on it rather than just thinking, okay, it's a gas mileage extender. You know, vitamin for your car made a great big difference. So linking things that they already know together. And that somewhat works with pricing when you say, you know, it's less than a cup of Starbucks a day, you know, to buy this product or something of that nature. So that's linking to something they relate to. Okay, let's see. We talked about desire to belong, desire to collect. Now, he talked about one where, like the Franklin Mint, sends you the first one of a set along with a gorgeous case to hold the whole set in. Okay, so you're almost, and that also ties in with guilt and reciprocity, which you feel guilty to have this beautiful piece of furniture they gave you for nothing, and so you go ahead and fill it up and buy the rest of these trinkets that are these commemorative coins or whatever it happens to be to fill the thing up. So the desire to collect is one, along with giving something to the person, which is called reciprocity or guilt is the short term for it, to get them to buy the rest of your stuff. Now, how would this work for us? Well, let's say, I don't know if many of you out there have done this, but you probably thought about it, making a 12-CD series on your topic. You know, 12 CD a month on speaking tips or publicity tips for Joan. So you give them you sell them the first CD, but as a surprise to them, you give them a special holder you made up for all 12 CDs in the set. So that move alone might cost you a few bucks on the front end, but it's much more likely that people will not want that package to go without each slot filled with each CD for the next year. Say. So that's the desire to collect, and it's not necessarily collector's items, but to fill up a void and have a whole set of something rather than some piece missing. So this will keep people buying your whole 12-month deal rather than quitting after 3 months. Okay, urgency, we've talked about that a lot before, so that's a very simple one. Exclusivity, that's like belonging to the Mercedes owners, or it's like coming to the retreat center. You know, it's the only place in the world you can do this, so making yours exclusive. Jim Rohn came out, this famous speaker, came out a while back with some numbered book of Jim Rohn quotes in limited edition. And I think I have one here in the library. But everybody wanted one, even if they never heard it, because it was limited edition. They were numbered and probably signed by him. I can't remember. I haven't looked at it for a while. So that's something that you could do, is come out with limited edition things. You know, we're only going to do 100 copies of this. Now, it's a little tougher to get along to do that if nobody's ever heard of you. Okay, but that's the idea, is make it so exclusive that they want to get it even if they don't really need it that bad. And he gives the example of he had 6 snowmobiles that he used at his retreat, and he didn't need any more snowmobiles, but he went down to the snowmobile dealer, and they had one left, and there was only 2 being sold of this fancy snowmobile in the whole state, and he bought it like immediately because it was so exclusive. So exclusivity really works. Simplicity is another thing that works really well, and this is one of the reasons I beat the pants off of most people when I'm speaking on selling stuff. They make their offers so ridiculously hard to understand, you know, get the gold, silver, platinum, and if you buy the platinum, you get the chartreuse widget with it. I mean, it's just so ridiculously hard to understand. So keep your offers very simple. Keep your sales letters very simple, and get your navigation buttons off your sales letter. And don't distract people with a bunch of other stuff unless it's helping you lead to the sale. So, for instance, you could put a link to some other page that specifically talks about testimonials or some other thing to help move the sale along. For instance, I might tell people when I'm trying to sell them the speaking stuff and they've never been in the speaking industry, I might say, you know, visit some speakers bureau sites just so you can see that there's companies out there and they sell speakers for enormous amounts of money and you probably never heard of the speaker. Just to prove the fact that there you can make a lot of money speaking. And so I might send them off to another page to show them some speakers bureaus and then bring them right back just to get them involved and to prove my point in the sales letter. But I very seldom want to send them somewhere else or to give them a chance to go to some freebie place to get free articles or do something else if I'm trying to sell them on the sales letter. So keep it very simple and lead them right down to the sale, buy or die. And then if they don't buy, then you can hit them with an exit deal, but make it simple. One, you know, just don't give them choices of what to do. Just say, here, sign up for our e-zine, or here, take our free e-course. But don't give them a bunch of things to pick from because it won't be simple and they'll leave. Okay, specificity. This is one you've probably heard in other copywriting arenas. If you say 98.2% of the Alaskan pipeline workers wear pantyhose, okay, that sounds believable because it was a specific number, 98.2. It makes it sound like you did some study and interviewed people and did the math and brought it exactly down to the exact tenth of a percent. All right, so being very specific on your terminology and your numbers and things in a sales letter gets more sales. So that's called specificity. And the last one we'll talk about is familiarity. And this has made me lots of money, continues to make me lots of money. And the beauty about it is that if you keep doing a good job, you keep it mushrooms on you. Because I continually get sales now in the last couple of years, because, and people say the exact words, Tom, we see your name everywhere. All right, so they see it in print, they see it on TV, they see it on the web all over the place, they see it in e-zines, they see it in books. Other people's books, my book. See, so when they're familiar with something, if you're up against competition and people have heard of you before and haven't heard of them and you've got a good reputation, you're going to beat the pants off of the other the competition because you're more familiar. So this is why you should be doing everything that Joan Stewart tells you about publicity and having your name show up everywhere you can possibly get it to show up, because when the time comes to sell something to somebody, when they've heard of you already, it's going to be a slam dunk relative to if they've not heard of you. Okay, so that's Psychological Triggers, a book by Joe Sugarman, or the book is just called Triggers, and the copyright is probably a couple years ago, but it's a 1999, but these things don't change. These things have been working for years for people. So any questions on psychological triggers?
Tom, this is Joan.
Yep.
I wanted to make a comment.
Okay.
I thought this was just excellent. And as you were ticking off this list, I was thinking to myself that several of the things you mentioned are tactics that you can also take to apply good sales copy writing when you are trying to contact journalists.
Oh, okay.
Pay attention to you. For example, objection resolution. If you can state objections right up front, you'll be in. Journalists love, absolutely love storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can pull them in with a short story, you'll be there. Plus, I thought authority, simplicity, and linking as a trigger were three more that you could do, either in pitch letters to journalists or in email pitches if you're trying to get them to write about you.
Yeah, absolutely. These things apply to a lot of things in your verbal communications, too, are the same. And he gives a lot of examples of people selling things face-to-face and so forth. So it's a $20 book, very, very good investment. And Joe is the real thing. He sold millions and millions of dollars. And he does mention some of his other books in here, which are excellent also. I have all of them. All right, anything else on triggers?
Tom, it's Roberta.
Yes.
Using all of this information, since I now have the 500 email people that I'm sending my tip of the week to,
mm-hmm.
How could I actually write a sales letter? Or what would you suggest to sell my product?
absolutely. Yeah, copywriting is the biggest. See, Roberta, and all the technical stuff I've shown you, if you mess up this part of writing the words to get people to buy, doesn't matter how good you are on the technical end, because this is the bottom line here. So one thing to help you learn to rough it out would be that program called 60-Second Sales Letters that Corey Rudel came out with not too long ago. And that leads you by the nose right through the basics of a sales letter and gets you started.
Does he have a book?
No, it's not a book. It's a program that you fill in headline, and he teaches you about headlines. And then you fill in subheads, and he teaches you about subheadings. And then the whole thing gets spit out as your first sales letter.
Okay, and I can get that off of his website?
Well, go to greatinternetmarketing.com /JV. Okay. And for everybody on the line, this is my repository for all the tools that I use and recommend. So you just look down through the page till you see 60-second sales letters. Now, once you get that rough out done, you could use it as is, or you can go back once it's in your website and start refining it and adding and tweaking these different triggers that we're talking about here. So, it's the fastest way to get started. And I know when it came out, I don't know, 5-6 months ago, I was so excited about it. And a lot of people were on this line and in the other mentor program were using it to really get things going quickly on their sales letters.
Okay, so basically get it from your site, get the sales letter, really tweak it, make it good for what's good for mine, for parenting.
Yeah, you have to know, you have to find out the buttons to push on parents, because I would be the last person to ask about that.
Okay,
but,
and then use the sales letter to just, you know, email everybody on my list?
Well, no, you would want the sales letter. The trend nowadays is to keep the long sales letters on your website.
Okay.
And then get them to go read it by some shorter copy that might say, here's the top three things. Click here to go over to see the top three mistakes parents are making nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And then it takes them to a sales letter that says, top three things mistakes parents are making. Mm-hmm. And then it starts out the sales letter, and they just have to read through the whole thing. And this is where you get exposed them to all the other sales triggers that you're going to put in there about parenting.
Okay, but that sounds like the tip of the week that I already give them.
What is?
I'll say like.
Well, no, I'm just throwing that out. I'm just saying, but you find some little hook to get them to read this long sales copy for whatever your product is. What's the name of the product?
Parenting Made Easy.
Parenting Made Easy. So you got to think up of a great headline for this sales letter, and then start getting them to read through of all the kinds of things that. It's hard to tell you until you actually see it and go through it once, and then you'll see all the different elements that you put in to keep them, to get that parent, by the time they're done with the letter, thinking, damn, my kid's going straight to hell if I don't buy this thing.
Which is like part of the scare tactic, too, right?
Well, that's, yeah, part of it, yeah.
Okay, but just one more question, but I'm still not clear how that's going to be a little different than the tip of the week, even though it's a lot longer.
Well,
it's going to sound similar.
Well, you're not clear yet, but you will be after you start writing this thing. That the whole thing is designed to get people to make that purchase.
Okay.
And so it may have elements of the tips of the week, but see, people are lazy, and if they can get everything if they really want in one shot, one place at a reasonable price, then that's what you're shooting for, to get them to buy that thing all in one shot rather than wait for weeks at a time to get one little tip each week.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Tom.
What else? Comments or questions on triggers? Anybody else? Okay, Janet, what's going on?
Hey, Tom. I've been working on front page tips to add to my front page show and tell site.
Okay, before you go too far, you're going to have to, I'm almost afraid you're going to have to scrap that one pretty soon and get 2003, because everybody that I'm talking to is buying 2003.
Okay, well, I'm working on it.
Okay.
But I'm still just working on the site, because I'm not out there, and I want to get some stuff on the site that people might want to come to, was my first thought. And then after listening to you today, I'm thinking, no, I just want to sell them my product. But what I was doing earlier today was I was collecting some front page. page tips of things that maybe I didn't go into great detail on my multimedia training CD.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, I'll just post that on the website. But after listening to you today, I think I'm going to take those and just make it like a monthly or an every other week tip newsletter.
Uh-huh, okay.
And have them sign up for that. So the only thing they focus on when they come to the site is what the front page show and tell's about, what's included, they get a sample, and then if they want to sign up for the tip. And then the tip,
well,
if they don't buy, I can continue to attempt to sell to them.
Well, why don't you just make the tips only if they don't buy? Why don't you... are you sending them to the site to get tips? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I was posting the tips right on front page show and tell.
Okay, and then trying to get them to buy the whole bit, right?
Right, but now I'm thinking maybe I should just have them sign up for the tip, so if they don't buy, I can continue to sell to them.
Well, yeah, I'm saying if they don't buy is maybe when you offer them the tips. It can work both ways.
Like in a pop-up?
Yeah, so I would say test it both ways and see which one works best, where you send them to the sales letter, and then if they don't buy, you give them the chance to sign up for the free tips, so
okay.
Then you can keep up with them. That's another method, okay. See? And the method you're using is using the tips to entice them to go to the site and then trying to upsell them to the book, right, or the CD.
No, it's all on the same site.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, you're giving them the tips on the site and then hoping that they buy the CD.
Correct.
Okay, so I'm saying the other way is another way to try is to, when they go to the site, they see the sales letter, and you hopefully they buy it right off the bat from your sales letter. And then if they don't, you offer them an e-zine with free tips on it.
Okay.
That's so there's, you know, either way as a possibility.
Okay, I'll test that out. I'm just waiting for the ad to come out in your newsletter.
Oh, boy, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to try to get to that tonight and tomorrow, but can't guarantee it.
Yeah, and then I'll be working on driving traffic to the site.
Okay. All right, what else?
Finished my email course, and I'm loading that up into the autoresponders today. And I'll be advertising that. And then I did a 25-day special.
This is a paid course?
It's a paid course.
Okay.
1997.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a lot, but I think that's what my market for.
No, I'm just saying about the 7 on the end.
Oh.
Yeah, because, and he made mention of that in here because not anybody's been able to give an exact clear explanation of why 7's. The last number being 7 works so well on the internet, but he does mention it in the book. All right, what else?
And then I did on my organizing products, and I tied in some of my internet products, I did a 25-day special event celebration in celebration of my son's turning 25.
Oh, okay.
I gave them a reason, and the first day I put it out to my subscriber list, I made $400.
Beautiful. So you just basically did an email promotion. You made it up out of thin air, basically, right?
Yeah, and I just took 25 products, and I put them on sale.
Beautiful. That is poetry in motion. I love that. I hope everybody that sinks in. She had no reason on earth to have this sale, and so she found something that tied in. And Joan did something with her 51st birthday or something, wasn't it, Joan?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a special mailing, telling people I just turned 52, and I had some bundled package that I offered. I gave them a flat 52% discount on anything that they ordered from my site, and ended up getting about $800 in sales just from that one.
Right. See, so both of those are the exact same idea. You just figured out some way to tie a promotion to some other event that was happening, and they both brought money in. Beautiful. All right, what else, Janet?
Oh, gosh, I think that's about it.
All right, great. Keep up the great work.
All right, thanks.
Okay, Coral, please introduce yourself. Some of the folks that are on the line today are from the new Mentee Joint Venture Program, and they're not really participating. They're just listening in, but they're welcome to introduce themselves and tell you what they're all about. You still on, Coral?
Yeah, I am.
Tell them who you are.
Yeah, my name is Coral Rice, and I'm in the St. Louis area, and have seen Tom for about 2 years now. I guess saw Tom at both of the Mark Victor Hansen Mega Book Marketing Conferences, and was certainly intrigued by what he had to say a year ago, and then this year we decided to move forward. We had enough of an idea of a number of projects that we'd like to work on, and Tom's been just wonderful in helping us to get a focus and to know where we're headed. We really have a passion for creating a strong network of Christian business people, and so...
All right.
To head to the retreat center in August.
Yep, you'll be here soon. And tell them, I mean, you're welcome. I won't put you on the spot, but anybody is welcome to give out their contact information if someone's interested in Christian business. Coral would be the person to talk to. I never put anybody on the spot to name their, you know, contact information. However, most of us are publicity hounds. And we'll be glad to.
Well, you can see a bit of what we're up to at www.thecbnwebsite.com. And we're in the process of renaming that, but that's where it is right now. And it is not yet, I mean, you can move around in the site, but we're not yet able to sign up for anything.
Okay, well, we'll get that moving along. Mm-hmm. I was just actually drove down to actual CBN Drive, which is the Christian Business Network, which is the 700 Club. It's kind of ironic, the dump for this whole area, the trash heap is right next to the 700 Club. But so I just went down there and saw their big facility and the satellites and everything. So it's a big field. Okie doke, Dave Balch, what is going on, man? Does he have to leave?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, this was really one of the best sessions ever. I'm trying to sell my book using Google AdWords, and I changed a few things around, and I've got my conversion rate up to about, I don't know, 1.25%.
Is that making money for you?
I'm just a little past a break-even.
Okay, good.
Which is a huge improvement.
All right.
But the copy on the site sucks big time. And just about every one of those things you mentioned, I could figure out a way, I mean, I could see a way to use it.
Okay.
In the context of what I'm trying to do. So I have high hopes for that.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend running out and getting that book. It's pretty popular. The major bookstore should have it.
Okay, well, I don't even feel like I need it after those 26.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I mean, I'll get it, but...
No, I mean, yeah, skin off of my nose either way, but, I mean, it gives a lot deeper explanation of the...
I just think that you do such a good job that I've got so much to work with. It's just the cookies that you gave us that...
Great.
Anyway.
And don't forget are you split testing your letters? You know what I mean?
Yes. I had two, mainly the only difference was the headlines.
Uh-huh.
One of them outpulled the other.
By how much?
Three or four times.
Now, you hear that, folks? He switched only one thing on his sales letter and rotated them. That's called split testing. And one headline pulled 3 to 4 times as many people as another headline. So this is why you must test. All right, great.
That's not exactly right. What I changed was the headline on the web page that they went to when they clicked on the ad.
Oh, okay, right.
Okay.
Yeah,
that
so...
It resulted in 3 to 4 times as many orders.
Exactly. All right, who was trying to break in there?
The question was answered. It was Marcia.
Okay, yeah. Split testing is you take the exact same letter, and one of them has a different headline. The only thing different is the headline, let's say. And so he found that the one headline pulled 3 to 4 times as many orders as the other headline. And if he hadn't tested it, he'd never know. So you can't fall in love with the headlines that you thought up that are cutesy or whatever, because the marketplace will tell the story.
Well, now I have another, based on what you just told us, I've got a new headline I'm going to try, and I think that's going to really be a grabber.
Okay. Wonderful.
So, okay, so that's my comments on today's session. The latest plan for marketing the Patient Partner Project is this. Believe it or not, there's a woman up here where I live at the mountains that is a former drug rep, and she and I are going to work together to try to package this and sell it to oncologists.
Okay.
So that's going to be a very highly targeted market. We're just going for oncologists.
How many of them are there?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I'm working on that. But once we figure out how to sell it to oncologists, then we're going to work it out into other a few other specialties that we think it's appropriate for.
Now, you might have to do a physical direct mail letter for them.
Well, first we're going to start with face-to-face because that's what she's
doing. Oh, okay, sure, yeah.
In order to learn what's important to them and who buys and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to roll it out nationwide using direct mail.
Okay.
So I don't really see this as a big internet sales project. It's going to be the product is mostly internet-based, but I don't know that the sales will be too internet-based.
Nobody cares. All we care about is sales. And, I just spent $2,000 last week on my $2,800, because I did a postcard mailing, and then I'm doing a 44-page sales letter that I've just completed, along with a lift letter, which is a letter from a big-name person endorsing me, and envelopes to go with it, and all that stuff. When you combine offline and online, that's your best chance of big success.
What's the product for
the Wake 'em Up speaking system.
44-page letter?
44 pages, yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, what you said about simplicity is something I already learned because I had about 5 different levels of sponsorship.
Yeah, too weird, yeah.
And it was way too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've got it down to 3. There's really only 2 because the third level is exactly the same, except it includes what I call a day of days. In other words, they get me for a day. And that's going to be packaged in. But without that, there's really only 2 levels.
Oh, yeah, that sounds much better to me. And for those of you who don't know, Dave has got the Patient Partner Project. It's a project that has to do with keeping in touch with relatives and communication when a person has got cancer. I imagine it could work with any other kind of disease, too. But
also, I provide a lot of caregiving information, and that's really the emphasis.
Yeah.
The thing you mentioned is really just one of the tools that I provide caregivers.
Okay.
And you talk about authority and I forget the other one, I think it started with an R. I joined a group called the National Quality Caregiving Coalition of the Rosalind Carter Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And I now can use their logo on all my stuff.
Are you getting an endorsement letter from her?
No, they won't do that.
Oh, boy.
There's a huge implied endorsement.
Yeah.
I've got a picture of myself talking to her.
Okay.
So that will help a lot.
Good.
Yeah, hey, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Jerome.
Hey, Jerome, how are you?
Hey, can I make a quick comment?
Yeah, yeah. Jerome's an ER room doctor.
Oh, yes. Yeah, listen, I mean, the only thing I'm thinking off the top of my head is I wonder if the target market is right. I mean, oncologists, they're like fighter pilots. They go zooming in there, and then once a lot of these guys don't follow the care to the end. So if it doesn't work with heme-onc guys, you might want to start considering, should I rethink this strategy and approach these patients' primary care physicians, too? Because there's a ton more family doctors and internists than there are heme-onc guys. Like my market's for ER doctors. There's 150,000 ER doctors. There might only be 10,000 heme-onc guys, 7,000, 5,000.
Well,
and a lot of times what happens is these heme-onc guys get done with their patients, and they hand them back to their internists and the family docs and the primary care guys for their ongoing care. And a lot of times insurance dynamics dictate that. So if the heme-onc approach doesn't work, maybe take a step back and see if one of these other doctor sectors is for you, too.
Hey, Jerome, can Dave email you a couple questions on this?
Sure.
What's your email address?
Yeah, it's JDeutch, which is JDEUTSCH.
Yes.
01@rcn.com, and RCN is Ricky, Connie, Nancy, rcn.com.
Okay.
Just send me whatever you want.
Great. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks,
Joel,
John.
Thank you very much.
All right.
We had considered that, but we thought that since the primary care people, to get the diagnosis, they immediately hand you off to somebody else, but they might not be so interested.
Okay. Well, then it sounds like you thought it through. That's fine.
Well, you guys check it out. All right, we got to move on here. So, you
okay.
Cool, Dave?
I'm cool.
Okay. Jane. Still there, Jane? You're talking to yourself if you are, because we can't hear you.
Somebody said they had to leave early.
Was that Jane?
I think it might have been.
Okay. Tammy. Mark. Oh, everybody had to leave early.
Mark here.
Oh, hey, Mark.
Hey.
All right. Okay, yeah, introduce yourself. You're in the other program, and so tell everybody who you are, what you do, and I'm sure they'd love to hear about it.
This is Mark Sumpter in Kansas City, and I went from being full-time police officer to and part-time real estate investor to full-time real estate investor and instructor or teacher. So I do seminars, and, you know, I was looking to market myself online, and I literally had no idea how I was going to do that. And with Tom's help, within a matter of 3 weeks, I've come quite a ways. I went from having no idea of how to put together a website to having one up and running. And Tom, I need to send that sales letter over to you. So
okay.
And if the folks that are still on the line that were talking about the 60-second sales letter, I did buy that, and it has. I can't describe how much help that thing has been for me because.
What's that?
60-second sales letter.
I had no idea how to write a sales letter, and this thing just kind of guided me right through it. And then I took it and put it right in the front page. And with Tom's help, I spruced it up. And the cool thing about it was that it also kind of teaches you a little bit about, you know, HTML code, which you don't necessarily even know, but you know, it helps. I've learned a tremendous amount just from using those two products within like the last 3 weeks. So I've got a site now that talks. I'm using audio generator.
Tell me your site.
It's www.speakingwithmark.com.
That's so M-A-R-K, right?
Yes, with a K. So I'm excited about the fact that that's up and running. And I don't necessarily like my voice on it, but, you know.
Nobody likes their voice, but Marlene will help you with that. She's our resident voice coach. All right, well, great. Glad you could stop by, and you know, we'll be keeping working hard in the other joint venture program.
And one quick question for you, Tom, on the Google AdWords. That's the homework I'm currently working on now.
Uh huh.
When you mentioned doing that and running, you know, testing two different ads.
No.
Sorry.
She doesn't like you to work on Google AdWords. you got your butt spanked.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Oh. No, somebody who didn't have their mute button on.
Okay. I was in trouble there. Am I sending them to the same sales letter, although I'm just testing two different ads? Is that what I'm doing? They're just going to go to the same sales letter?
On Google AdWords, you're going to test ads on their part, and they're going to rotate several different little mini ads for you. And then if you use your ad tracking rotating function from your shopping cart system, when they get to your site, it'll rotate which ad they actually see, on the which sales page they actually see. So you have testing on one end and the other end going at the same time.
So I need to have two different sales letters as well?
Well, all you do is copy the first one onto another page. And then maybe change the headline. That's what we're talking about with Dave.
Okay, that's what I didn't understand.
Yeah, and then you set it up in your ad tracking module to rotate automatically which one shows. It, like, if you show 100 people the sales letter, 50 will see copy 1 and 50 will see copy 2 with the different headline.
Okay.
And it'll tell you which one is making more money for you.
Okay.
All right? Okie doke. Well, glad you could be here. Joan, what's going on?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
I never know if I'm muted or not.
Yeah, I know. That's toggle.
I'm going to be buying a Google pay-per-click ad this afternoon to try to sell a CD or an audio cassette called How to Get Booked on National Public Radio.
Okay.
And unfortunately, this was one of the few that I did that Dan Janelle did not tape for me, and I wish that he had, because the quality is not as perfect as the rest of them are. It was a live teleseminar.
Uh-huh.
The sales letter is done, but based on what you just told us, I want to go back and I want to say something about the fact that the quality is not perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Go over from the objection.
There you go.
Okay, how do you say that? What's the phrase?
Well, which phrase?
When you tell them that this is a live teleseminar and it doesn't sound like Carnegie Hall.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything like that is fine. I said, so you address the objection and immediately overcome the objection. So I send this thing, this piece of paper, at least I used to when I was sending a lot of cassettes out, that said, you know, if you wanted Quincy Jones to record this, you're in for a rude awakening. But I swear to you that there's thousands of hours of research and work that went into the content of this, and you'll never be dissatisfied. Something like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, it sounds a little funny. It's a live teleseminar, but, hey, it's going to be worth it.
Okay.
Because
then the second question is, I'm in the process of creating more big bundles from the existing products I already have. I'm mixing and matching CDs and special reports and all mm-hmm. kinds of stuff. The price point's going to be approximately $397.
Okay.
How do I put these, what's the best way to promote these bundles from the website? I know how to do it through the e-zine, but I don't know where to put them at the website.
Well, I don't really make a big deal of, I hardly have any bundles on my website except something that's already called a system, like the Waking Up Speaking System. All my bundles have been sold mostly through specific promotions driving people to that one bundle. So if you know how to do that on email, you're already done there. And I don't do them that much on the website. So the answer is
okay.
I don't know, because I've never done it that much. I specifically made bundles for speaking at the back of the room, and then if there's another bundle, I make a special promotion out of it and do a big hit on it. And if it's really successful, then I might leave it there and just do it as a, you know, get all the above for, you know, link,
okay,
click here. So I haven't personally gone into putting a whole lot of bundles on the website.
Okay. Then the third and last question is, I'm reading a lot of stuff recently from people who have blogs saying that they are putting their I don't know what the correct terminology is, but their regular e-zine has become part of the blog. And as a result of that, they're getting great search engine ranking for the actual e-zine
mm-hmm.
that the search engines find through the blog. Have you heard of this, or what's your advice on blogs?
Well, my blogs is still one of these things that's on my radar screen, but not real bright at this point, because it's still not anywhere near mainstream enough to suit me.
Okay.
Doesn't mean it can't be successful for you, but you still have to depend on people coming and visiting regularly rather than you going and getting in their face by being in their inbox. So, yes, if you have a loyal following and they stop back and read. However, you do have to keep, if it's a blog, you're going to have to keep up on it a lot more than you would an e-zine.
Right.
So you have to be willing to put that effort into it. And then, whether the search engines pick them up or not, I guess that they would. It's just another form of content. So, yes, I believe that if you're hearing good things about that, I can believe that. However, the other side of the scales of justice are, okay, you got to stick your nose in this about every day or nobody's going to keep coming back to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, by the way, blogs is a, what's it stand for?
Weblog,
yeah. It's like a diary or journal online for people to look at. So, you know, if you only make, you know, I'd be hurting if I did one, because I can't even get my darn e-zine out in the last month, let alone every day be making an entry on this thing. So I think that there's a lot of work involved in it, and I think that's how it would inhibit me from messing with it in the short run, because I couldn't possibly keep up with regular entries. So it's nothing that I'm going to be paying attention to in the next couple months for sure, and probably at least in the next 6 months, unless
okay.
I get a lot of help here.
That's all I have, Tom.
Okay.
Hey, John, what's your email with that?
Initial J, Stewart, Stewart, at publicityhound.com.
It's Mark Sumter, and I'm going to give you a...
Oh, good, because I wanted to ask you something, too, so we'll email back and forth.
Great.
Okay.
All right, Marcia, what's going on?
Well, a whole bunch of good things have happened. I did the coach speaking special interest group just the other night. I think you did that a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I did?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
Did, for the International Coaching Federation.
Okay.
And I put my chicken dinner marketing manual up for like one-third price off, and I had several takers, so I was happy about that.
So basically, for everybody else, I think I'm remembering this. We were asked to do there's a series of teleseminars going on for the International Coaching, what is it, Federation?
Coaching Federation. They have a public speaking specialty.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And a lot of coaches are using public speaking to try and market their businesses.
Right. So they, Marcia was on like a couple weeks after I was on. And this is a good method, is to get on other people's teleseminars to sell your stuff. And this goes along with being more familiar. Your name keeps coming up. Now all these coaches, even if they weren't on the line, heard about Marcia and I through the announcements of these things. I very seldom turn down doing a teleseminar because I can do it from the office, and it's just another whole group of people that's hearing my name that never did before. So that's great, Marcia.
Well, and that manual I sell on my website for $150, and I gave it to them for $99, and I had three takers so far. So
all right, $300.
Yeah, so that's
not too shabby.
Yeah. The other thing was, in the last 4 weeks, I've had two fabulous articles done on me and my leadership coaching business. So much so that they can't get it on an 8.5 by 11 when they do the reprints. They're actually, 11 by 17. And I was just wondering, what would be the best way to include them on my website? Where would I put them?
Well, do you have the permission to do it?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, any number of places you could put those in the free article section. You actually could put them there. You know, anytime you put the word free, but if it's just like a testimonial kind of section, no, because people skip them all the time.
Okay.
And I used to have an in the news section on my website, or what's new kind of thing. Nobody gave a damn what was new on my website, and I found it was the least visited portion. So I wouldn't do anything like that. But I would, are these big name publications?
Pennsylvania Business Journal. I mean, it's not small, but it's
huge. Okay. And these were by you or about you?
They were about me.
About you.
One was Woman Finds Her Calling in Building Others' Success, and the other one was Burke's Woman Helps Clients Fulfill Personal and Professional Goals. And, I mean, the articles ended up being twice the size that any of the editors expected.
Okay. Well,
which is good.
Yeah. There's various ways. I mean, there's no one answer to this, but one would be to put those links on your website, the headline of the article as the link text, and let them click and go right to the to a page that has, it says, this is an article that appeared in the Eastern So-and-So Business Journal, and then redo the headline and put the article there. So that could be right off your homepage if you wanted to.
Okay.
It could be off another link to them off of your About Marcia kind of page, bio page. Marcia's been written about in the So-and-So Business Journal. And then you put a link right there under those words.
Okay.
So they can go right from your bio to those articles.
Okay, great.
See, so So those kinds of places.
Okay, great. And still haven't quit my job, but working on it.
Okay, well, make sure you get a big severance package before you do.
I'm working on that. The other thing is I'm going to be doing another teleseminar, and I tell you, these are great sources of income, and the one I'm going to be doing is how to develop a great elevator speech.
Okay.
So that's going to happen in about 3 weeks.
Yeah, people love that topic. And there's a guy in NSA selling an e-book on that that's pretty short, and he's been selling them like crazy.
Yeah. Okay. And that's about it for now.
All right, so do you mind telling us how the teleseminars have been doing for you?
Well, I made the mistake of trying to do 6 of them in 8 weeks.
Right, right.
Just a little. And then I packaged them, and right in the very beginning, one person bought each package, so I couldn't even cancel any of them. So, you know, I fixed myself real good on that one.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Well, made you sit down and do them, though.
Oh, yeah, and as a result, I now have 6 new CDs. Not counting the sales on the CDs afterwards, I think I averaged about $300-$400 each. I charged $29.95.
Okay, so right out of the gate, with no big database or anything, you made a couple $100 just for doing it and got a new product.
Well, I have an e-zine with 20,000 subscribers.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say my database is small.
Okay. And how many people do you get to sign up?
I think it probably averaged about 10.
Okay. Well, when I first started, I had a little bit a smaller database, but back in those days it was easier to get people's attention and more emails were getting through. So you're doing just fine.
Okay. Oh, all right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you want to the problem most likely is the delivery rates on your emails. They're just not getting through like they used to, and people have a gazillion emails, so it's a little tougher than it used to be. But still, you know, $300 and a new product is no shabby start. So.
Yeah, and I did learn that trying to put them together that frequently was, you know, stupid.
that would hurt you because people get sick of you and it's just too much. It's the violation of the keep it simple thing, you know.
Right, and so my plan now is to do one a month.
Yeah, that's more than enough, yeah. Beautiful.
Okay, hey, thanks.
All right. Ned, please.
See you in Phoenix.
Oh, yeah. Are you coming to a butt camp?
The last half of it, yeah.
Okay, that's right. Okay, yeah, by the way, I forgot to mention, butt camp is July 15th, Thursday. Mentees come for free. And that's... right before the National Speakers Association Convention in Phoenix. And, oh, another null announcement here is August 19th to 23rd are the new dates for the retreat center. It'll sell out. It may be sold out now because since I've been I sent the email out to the rest of the mentees right before I got on this call, and they probably scarfed them up already. Ned, are you still on? Okay, Marlena.
Here I am.
Hi, tell us what you've been up to.
Well, I cleared my plate, and now I have time to really focus in on getting this CD done.
Good, because that's all I'm going to talk to you about.
No, I guess I've got my studio all set up. I'm really excited about that.
Your computer's all to the point where it can handle this properly?
Yes, uh-huh. Well, you know, I got the stuff from, what's his name?
Mike Stewart?
Mike Stewart.
So you got the sound card, you got the microphone. Well, you had a microphone, didn't you?
I did, but I didn't have one. I had one that was for singing and not for speaking.
Oh, okay.
So
there is a difference, yeah.
So now I have the whole setup, and I was recording this morning for a couple hours, and I'm going to have it done by Wednesday morning.
Beautiful.
And not only that, I have another CD project that I've been telling, specifically for women, I've been telling women about, and I have about 10 sales already on that. So.
And you haven't even recorded it yet.
I haven't even recorded
it. Oh, I love this country.
So I've got it pretty much outlined and everything. So
What's the name of the first one again?
The first one is How to Use Your Voice for Knock 'Em Dead Presentations.
And how much is it going to cost?
I'm struggling with that.
you know...
There's no struggle. You make up a couple things, and then you test them.
Well, you know, what I'm thinking of, Tom, is I'm thinking of doing two CDs, one with the information, and the second one would actually be exercises.
Oh, that's cool.
So, and that way I figure, it, rather than, you know, I thought I could, it would be a bigger bang for my buck, for, you know, I would be able to ask for more money on that.
No question about it.
So, and I don't know. I mean...
So, when's that going to happen?
Well, I'm going to have everything done by Wednesday morning.
All right.
So
well,
you're going to be hearing from me. So
I'll expect an email.
Okay, then I need to know the next step so I can get this done.
No, I ain't telling you until you get that done.
I know that.
So then after Wednesday, you can ask me after you play me some clips on the phone.
Okay.
All right. I haven't forgot about who you are.
Oh, I haven't either. I'm committed to doing this whenever.
And not to embarrass Marlena, but... she's so creative, I got to put blinders on her and get her focused on one thing to get done. And then you're not the only one, Marlene. Trust me, there's a lot of people in the other mentee program, this one, that they take on too much and then nothing gets done. So
right.
It's my job to put you laser focus and get something under your belt.
Well, my little studio, I actually have sheets all the way around it, so I can't look at anything else.
Beautiful.
I get distracted so quickly.
All right, well... All right, so I'll hear from you Wednesday then sometime.
Wednesday you will.
All right.
Great, thanks.
Great. Roberta.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I did a few things that we said. I started working on the spy doors.
Okay.
Have lots more to do, but at least I was happy I got that set. I shortened the testimonials on my products. That was time-consuming. And I emailed both of the people that you told me about the website. One guy never answered, and the other guy emailed me back. I think this is named Harry.
Harold, yeah.
Harold, right. He's in Europe. He'll be back June 10th.
Okay.
So I will talk to him then and see. What I wanted to ask, and I still not, now the next step is to really get the auto responders into shape. My question to you is, what don't you like about my present site that you think Harold could help me with?
Oh, boy.
Because I can do a lot of it on my own. I have the e-commerce set up already. If I do the Kickstart cart with the autoresponders, I should be in good shape. And the only thing is, they suggest not submitting to the search engines more than once a month.
Yeah, there's no reason for it because they don't update themselves much more than that. So you could be submitting something and then submitting something over top of it, and the search engine never even got a chance to see the first one.
Right. They say like on the 15th of every month.
Yeah, but see here, the more sophisticated rule is, don't submit any good pages until they turn into bad pages.
What do you mean?
Well, a good page on the internet is one that gets a high search engine ranking.
Mm-hmm.
A bad page is one that doesn't.
Okay.
So if you have a good ranking, quit submitting that page. Because you may submit it to a new set of rules and get a bad ranking. So you want to keep submitting your bad pages regularly and quit submitting your good pages.
So in other words, as you saw, I can see what keywords people are putting in. Now you said just forget about that and go on to the next keywords. So I can keep putting in new keywords. And I know from the first time we spoke, I can see the ranking of what people are typing in for their keywords. You know what I'm saying?
You mean on the search term tool to see how popular it is?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's what you want me to do.
I want you to find out which ones are most popular, and what one of the suggestions I am sure I made to you was to start at the bottom of the list,
right,
because it's not as there's not as much competition there.
Right. So I'm starting where people are checking about 250, keywords a month.
Or searches.
Searches, I'm sorry.
A month on that particular keyword.
Right. And then I'm doing a side door article on that as well.
On that specific keyword and putting it up on a page by itself.
Correct.
On your website.
And I put my email, to capture their email address on the page. It took a little, time to get that all set up.
Okay.
So when I submit the next time, you want me to keep submitting. In other words, let's say I've submitted 10 of these keywords where people are searching 250 times a month.
Ten different keywords or 10 pages on the same keyword?
Well, you tell me.
Well, that's what you end up doing is you vary the keyword density.
Mm-hmm.
So have you done that part of this?
For the articles?
Yeah.
Yes.
So you have like at least 10 versions of each article?
No. I'm, I still still probably have about 30 articles, and I told you it just took a little while to get all the pages set up.
Okay.
So it would be an individual page, and I really got the email addresses set up. I have a question for you. I have my picture and about Roberta on that page as well. Should I take that off?
Well, I would keep it only if you need to hide keywords like in the alternate description of it.
Okay.
But you want fast-loading pages, easy to, you want to make it as easy as possible for the search engines to find it. So I typically don't have a whole lot of graphics on these pages.
Okay, so I was wondering, so I'll take that off. But just getting back to submitting it, so I'm still not clear. Should I keep every month submitting the same words until I keep seeing them come up in the
well,
search?
Yes. Yeah, the idea is you submit. See, they're considered bad pages now because they're not getting high rankings.
Okay.
So you submit them regularly until you are getting high rankings.
High ranking means I'll start seeing that people are finding me through those words, right?
No, that means that you. Well, yes, that would be one way that you would be able to tell. But the more the way you'd really tell is to type that keyword into the search engine.
Uh-huh.
And see if one of your pages comes up.
Oh, okay. And
that's the real acid test. Huh?
That's when I know I have a high ranking, and that's when I should move on to putting some other words in.
That's right.
Okay.
Or actually, you don't have to wait. You can still, with 30 days in between time, you got plenty of dead time.
Right.
So I would be just continue to work the whole time, and then eventually, when you get enough copies of these with different keyword densities, some of them are going to start showing up.
Okay.
Now, I probably don't have any more than 10 to 15% at any one time that are making high rankings.
Mm-hmm.
But that 10 to 15% consistently over time can make you a fortune.
Okay. Well, I'm working on that.
Okay.
And the next step, I believe, I should really get the autoresponders in shape.
Well, yeah, you got to get that stuff because that's a much faster return.
Okay, so that's what I'm working on now. When he comes back from Europe, I'll speak to him and see what he can do for me that I'm not doing now on my site.
Okay, and now Jason is very busy. If you don't get an email back also, just like with me, don't feel bad about going to the site and getting the phone number and calling because maybe the email didn't get there.
Okay.
Who knows?
I'll try that again.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Jerome, still in there?
Yeah, Tom, can you hear me?
Yeah. How's it going, man?
Yeah, I sent you that email, but I'm on hold for about 10 days, which there's nothing I can do about that. So what I'm going to do in the meantime is just keep preparing ahead of time. So it'll still turn out to be, by the end of June, one CD a week.
Okay.
It'll just be I'm doing all the researching and outlining now, and then the end of next week or the following week, what I told them was every other day for 4 sessions.
Okay, now...
Do you want to go every day, or do you think every other day is too much, too?
Well, it depends on how your voice holds up. So, I think every day is too much, yeah.
I told them every... what I did was I did Friday, Monday, Wednesday, Monday.
Yeah, you just have to see it and then, try to get sleep in between and not get confused. See, one of the things that happens when you jam them too close together, you forget what the hell you said on the other... like yesterday. I mean, I might have been doing a consultation this morning and start to think, did I tell the mentees this on the phone right now, or was it the other person? I forget.
Well, I my hope was to do one a week, then outline the next one, then do the next,
Yeah, but that's going to take you too long if that guy can't get you scheduled.
If I just sit back and wait here now, I'm going to have about three to four ready to go by the time I can get in there again.
All right.
If I don't like them, I'll just redo them like I did the first one.
All right, let me ask you about the packaging. Do you have disc makers started on the packaging?
I haven't sent them the first one. No, I could do that.
Yeah, that's something you could be working on in the meantime, telling them what to expect.
Okay.
That there's so many different discs coming,
right.
So they create a consistent theme for you.
Right.
And set it up for disc one, disc two, however you're going to do it.
Well, I did have a discussion with disc makers maybe about 10 days ago.
Okay.
And what the rep at disc maker said to me was, since we're not sure how many discs this is going to be, he thought, okay, the first one might be red and black, the next one might be green and blue, and it'll be the same theme all the way through. And then once when I tell them, okay, this is the last CD, he'll create a box that fits exactly that many.
Okay.
So he said he's done this before, that you're not really sure how many CDs will be in the end. So he said, okay, what we'll do is we'll just create a constant theme. We'll change the colors for each individual CD.
That sounds good.
Then at the end, when you tell me this is the last one, we won't create the box until all of them are done.
Okay.
And then we'll create the box to fit it exactly. Now, you were saying that sometimes when you send out one or two CDs, you have a box. I think it's from, Polycorp?
Well, it's polylinecorp.com. But
right. And then you might only have two CDs in there, but it might fit like 15.
Yeah, well, I don't use a vinyl album for that. I use a really nice zippered pouch that has my websites embossed on the front, and
okay.
There's extra pouches in there. But I wouldn't create a vinyl album with a certain number of slots and then not fill the slots.
Okay, so I should just go with what this fellow at Discmakers is thinking.
Yeah, except it wouldn't hurt you if you're going to be in the CD business to go ahead and get something like I have and a nice fancy. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, whoever just got the phone call, please go on mute.
But I'm just ending up with him. What's up?
Roberta.
Yeah.
Okay, wait a second.
Roberta, mute yourself. Star 6. You're not.
There's something in the background.
Yeah.
Okay, and I hope you don't mind. We're going to bring my mother and Amy to that.
Roberta! Mute yourself. Thank you. All right.
Okay, I should get something.
I think you might want to. I mean, these things are only $4.50 a piece, and you'll use them forever for something. It's a real nice zippered thing. I don't know if you have one of mine or not. It's red and black.
Yeah, I in the middle of all that muting back and forth, I didn't hear the thing that I should buy.
Okay. I don't think she actually muted.
Tom, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, it's Roberta. I'm not muted. I have to run now. Can you do me a favor and tell me when the next mentor program is going to be?
Let's see. Hold on. It'll be approximately 2 weeks. Let's see. What's the date today?
Today's the 7th.
June the 7th. Let's say Tuesday, June 22nd, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern.
8 o'clock p.m. Okay, thank you so
much,
Tom. All
right, bye. Let me write that down, folks. Tuesday. All right, mentee. Okay, yeah. Jerome, I was saying that you may have one of the ones that I have. It's a little vinyl red and black pouch with a zipper on it, and it holds like 12 CDs.
Okay.
They're only like $4.50 a piece, and they're, embossed with my websites on the front.
Yeah, I'm almost wondering, how we were talking about selling these as a whole kit and then selling them individually?
Yes.
Maybe that would be the delivery mode for the individual sale.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if there's extra pouches in there, because the idea is they'll throw their own music CDs in there, and it's always going to be sitting around their car with your name on it.
Okay, so for the whole kit, just go with the disc maker thing. He's going to create a box when it's done with a theme all the way through with different colors, and then get these from Polycorp.
The ones that I'm talking about, I want you to go to Stam Online, STAMONLINE.
Okay.
Tell them you know me and you want to get a CD case similar to what I have.
Okay, and then use those for the individuals.
Use those for individuals, and, they're real nice. But the price you're going to be charging for these, you can easily absorb this, and it's got to be a nicer quality to sit around all the Beamers of your buddies.
How many should I get off the bat?
Oh, I think you got to get 100 or 144 to make it worthwhile.
Well, no, I don't mean the minimum. I mean, how many should I? I mean, if you tell me 500, I mean.
No, I would get 144.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be enough to start with.
And the only other thing is, remember we were talking about dropping music in at the beginning and then in between tracks?
Right.
Now, there's a site called musicbakery.com that has royalty-free music. You could just test it, then download it. Should I do that? Buy the CD there with something I like, or should I just let Wayne in the recording studio do it when I see him again?
I would let Wayne do it because he's bound to have the same things right there, and he'll be able to pick better, something that suits you and give you some selections that make sense.
Okay,
and
so in terms of type and length, just follow his lead.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got you.
Yeah, they do it all the time. You know, it'll be easy for him to do.
Yeah, it's just a matter of I wanted to do these one at a time, so I didn't mix up my thought process, but I'll just have to do the best I can with, I mean, he's booked up, he's so good, there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, you're fine. You're way ahead of the game. Don't worry about it.
All right, that's all I got.
Okay, man. Anybody else on I don't know about?
Hey, Tom, this is Dan.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Good. Couple of questions for you.
Yep.
I'm writing a sales letter for my mentee program, you know, something new that I'm going to announce, and I'm going to put in my newsletter, and I'm curious, should I have that as my sales letter, and do I link that to my shopping cart, or do I link that to another page on my website that does a deeper sales letter?
I always, the trend nowadays is shorter email, linking to a long sales letter on the website.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, there's almost no question about that, simply because the more words you have on an email, the less chance it's going to get through, and the website can be more graphic without worry.
Okay, good. And you mentioned a while back that you were going to talk to the guys at Shopping Cart about allowing us to import our names from our...
Yep, it's done, and I got a method for you to do it.
Okay.
If anybody wants to hear about it, I'll just mention it right now, and it'll be on tape. So the method is to email your request to Cliff, C-L-I-F-F, at oneshoppingcart.com. That's the number one, shoppingcart.com, which for those of you who don't know, that's the mother company to Kickstart Cart.
C-L-I-F-F?
Yeah, at oneshoppingcart.com.
Mm-hmm.
And he can be reached by phone at 705-792-5299, extension 2230.
Mm-hmm.
And also you'll need his fax number, fax 705-792-5253.
And what is this for, Tom?
This is to, if you're new to Kickstart Card and have a database already, you must get special dispensation clearance to be allowed to import that database. This is protecting us against some spammer importing a database and spamming a bunch of people, and then all the ISPs shut down emails coming from us. So since you know me, I have made a special deal with Kickstart Card and One Shopping Card to allow my professional people to import their databases, but they still have to prove and tell where the database came from. So you'll have to print out your terms of service on the Kickstart Card, and you can email me if you want to know where to find that, and you'll have to sign it. And then and fax it to Cliff, along with another piece of paper that says exactly how the emails were captured, who these people are, and whatever else you think needs to be convincing that these are real people under your control. Now, yes, it sounds like a pain in the neck. I was going to say something else, but but the fact is this protects us, you know, from other people ruining it for everybody. So that's all you got to do. Basically, you got to print out the terms of service, write a little note of who you are and what you're doing, sign it and fax it to them. Then I would follow up with a phone call just to make sure he got the fax and find out when he'll be able to clear you through.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else? Anybody else? Okie dokie. So we're set for next call of Tuesday, June 22nd, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Keep those cards and letters coming. Let me know if anybody's wanting to attend Butt Camp July 15th. Also, you might want to resell Butt Camp, even if you're not coming, by sending some emails as an affiliate. You get a 50% commission on the entry fee, so if somebody... pays $300 to come, you make $150 of it. So anyway, that's the story. We'll catch you all later.
Bye, Tom.